Welcome to Warning Shot with Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Joel Rubin and Endy Zemanides, Executive Director of the Hellenic American Leadership Council, plus our special guest, Ukrainian-born American businessman Lev Parnas. Here's Joel and Endy.
Airstrikes hitting large cities and thousands of people attempting to flee the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv.
Welcome back to Warning Shot. Endy Zemanides here, and as fun as it is to be on with my co-host, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, Joel Rubin, today is not a fun day. Today is a day that we will remember as consequential as September 11th. It may be the end of the Pax Americana. It's definitely a new world order. It's going to be one that looks to be marked by chaos. There's a Chinese curse that says, may you live in interesting times. And today's kind of a walk-off homer, Joel.
No kidding, Andy. Really, this is not what anyone ever expected, a land war in Europe in 2022. But here we have it, Vladimir Putin illegally invading a neighbor, a democratic ally, Ukraine, committing gross human rights violations, violating international law, thumbing his nose at past treaties, thumbing his nose at the United Nations Security Council, turning down overtures of diplomacy. All for what? For an attempt to undermine the stability that we've enjoyed for more than seven decades so that he can reassert some type of hegemonic control near his borders. This is how wars happen. This is how they start. And they always have a way of ending very, very badly. And it is a dark day. And for that, we should all think a little more deeply about how we can hug our children and what America's role will be going forward, because today is very different from yesterday.
And speaking of hugging loved ones, I want to bring on our next guest, or our first guest, actually Lev Parnas. While he's familiar with all you, and we'll get into talking about politics, he has family in Ukraine right now. He's a Ukrainian American, and I'll get into this later, but having lived through an invasion myself in 1974, Turkey's invasion of Cyprus, we don't ever talk on these shows about this human element. We look at the chaotic scenes from Afghanistan or even from Kyiv today, and we're not talking about people. Lev, take us in Kyiv now. I know you got families that is hunkered down. Tell us what they're feeling and what you're hearing from them.
Yes. Hi, guys. Thank you for having me on. I wish it was better circumstances, but I agree with Joe. Today is an extremely sad day. I didn't sleep all night. I was on the phone with family, friends, relatives in Kyiv, Odessa. Speaking to my cousin, actually. He's with his wife, an 8-year-old daughter. They were trying to leave at around 7:30 in the morning, Kyiv time, and the roads were so heavily congested and blocked, they had to return. It took them 4 hours to get back to the house, and now they're bunkered down. They have their bags packed, and just, I could hear his daughter crying in the background. His wife is very nervous. He's trying to keep calm, but, he's asking me, what are they reporting? What's they're saying? As you can hear bombs going off in the background. So I'd like for everybody to, even though I know it's a political thing, but there is real human beings involved and kids, and we need to all please say a prayer today that somehow, this goes by and we don't have extreme casualties.
Lev, can I ask you on that line, the Ukrainian people have been engaged in a war in the East for almost 8 years now with Russia. Do you think that people in Ukraine really thought that Vladimir Putin would do what he's now doing? Take us a little bit into how people have been talking about it inside Kyiv, in the country, over the past couple of months as we've seen this massing of military force around Ukraine's borders.
I mean, even right now, while the shelling is going on, people can't believe it's happening. It's surreal. People are bunkered down. I just spoke to somebody in Kharkov. They're sitting in bomb shelters in the subway, and they woke up to a new world today. Nobody ever in Ukraine thought that this was going to happen, because at the end of the day, yes, the language might be a little bit different, but they're still brothers and sisters. I mean, they're neighbors, and nobody expected this to be a full-blown invasion. Everybody got used to the Donbass situation because you had your separatists there. Nobody liked it. Nobody liked the Crimea situation, but Crimea has a history of its own going back and forth. It was Russia at one point and Ukraine at one point and back. So there was always it, but this is just, this is not something, he's a madman. This is something that cannot be forgiven or look the other way. This is atrocity happening right now.
What are the best hopes of the people on the ground right now, and what are their worst fears?
Their best hopes is somehow that the world sees what's going on and they help Ukraine, because everybody there understands that Ukraine, you know, everybody wants to be a patriot and pray and hope that they could do it. But it's like, you know, realistically, when you're 5 foot tall and you're fighting a 7 foot tall, 300 pound monster, it's yes, do you have maybe that one slip of a chance and you hope that you get him or something? But again, at the end of the day, you know that probably you're going to be overpowered. So they're hoping that somehow the world comes in and helps them to be able to sustain, to be able to withhold the Russian invasion. Worst case scenario, they don't know. My cousin doesn't even know what to say. He goes, I can't believe it. What, am I going to be Russian tomorrow? I don't understand how that's even going to play out. So a lot of confusion, a lot of.
So in that case, Lev, people say, the people of Ukraine are proud people, and they've, as Joel has pointed out, they're fighting for freedom. Do you think Russia is really going to try to occupy this? And if so, is this going to be a long and really bloody resistance?
Great question.
Is this going to be something, we saw, this is comparable for all of us as the students of history to some of the Nazi occupations, and we know how the resistance was effective in countries like Yugoslavia and Greece, and Ukraine itself. If Russia tries to stay for a long time, will the people of Ukraine exact a cost?
And I'm going to pile on just before asking for you to share your thoughts, Lev, which is there were a couple of things that Vladimir Putin said that really stood out to me in his speech a couple of days ago, where he talked about the need to demilitarize Ukraine and denazify Ukraine, which of course, having a elected president who's Jewish, is deeply offensive and ahistoric of him to say that. But I wanted to know if you can unpack that as well. What's he getting at with demilitarize and denazify? And then with Andy's question, what does this mean for the way people resist? And can you share us your thoughts? Yeah.
Well, for you to really understand, I think Joel and you guys understand Putin, this is not something new. I mean, he's a chameleon. The past 20 some odd years, he's just been playing, laying low, changing colors to play along, waiting for that moment where he could attack him. But from day one, what he ever wanted to, he's a KGB agent. He was born and bred to have the USSR back. And what we're seeing right now is not some crazy madman that all of a sudden is sick. I mean, you hear all these rumors. No, this is the true colors of a gentleman or an individual. I can't even call him a gentleman, a monster that has been laying in the lurks for all these years, waiting for that one opportunity to be able to reunite the old USSR. So to answer you, Andy, I think we've entered a seriously long war. I think, yes, he's going to occupy Ukraine 100%. I don't think he'll be able to do it quickly and take over all of Ukraine. The Ukraine is a big mass of land, and there will be a lot of patriots and fighting. But unfortunately, I think he's going to divide it. There'll be a lot of civil war, civil unrest. And eventually, my opinion, unless something happens, unless the world jumps in, unless there's some sort of savior, the people will fold. It's just a matter of time. When you starve, when you eat, when you need, you're going to want to live. And like I said, so yes, I think we've entered a second Cold War 2.0. I think it's going to be very long in there. And it, not just us. I think the Europe is going to be impacted tremendously by what's going on. I mean, unfortunately, we need to sanction it. And I hope later today, President Biden's going to come out and sanction him. And with SWIFT and everything else, we need to nail him as hard as I can. But unfortunately, it's going to be a worldwide impact. I mean, and Europe's going to feel it worse than everybody. Because what a lot of people don't understand is what Putin, he's a chess player. He's a mastermind. So while a lot of the world was playing checkers in between the transfer, he was playing chess. And he laid out the pieces. His oligarchs that people think are regular people, these are not regular people. To become an oligarch in Russia, you have to be loyal to Putin.
Do you really think he's a mastermind? I want to get into this, and Joel, maybe this is... Do you really think he's a mastermind, or is it we're just not playing the game? You know, Ukraine, the last time I saw, Ukraine, I remember during the crisis... In 2014, the national team of Ukraine had to play Team USA in Cyprus because Russia was causing problems. And I remember feeling, is our problem we're playing with three or four less players on the pitch than Putin is? Because it seems he miscalculated, but we also did not take him seriously. There were people, and there are still people today. Tulsi Gabbard makes a tweet as if this was all about NATO. It's not about NATO.
Yeah, I'm totally interested in your views on the NATO thing, but I want you to answer. I know you were ready to respond, and I got to get into that question. Go ahead.
What we were talking about, and we'll talk about Tulsi Gabbard and Don Jr. and Candace Owens, and these are all puppets, and they're propaganda spreaders, and... I think there's a bigger game plan that they have in mind for 2024, and that's why I think Trump came out and said that.
What do you mean?
If you take a look at what happened in the past in 2020, and I was obviously involved in that whole scenario, the impeachment, and what was the first thing that Trump was in that phone call? He was saying, "Can you do me a favor, though?" Zelensky didn't do him that favor. He didn't fold, and now we see what's happening. Trump lost. What happens in 2024? If he calls Putin and says, "Can you do me a favor, though?" What's Putin going to say after the response he's getting right now from the GOP, Trump, and all his... Well, I think Trump is playing it forward and trying to show, and I think a lot of his minions are showing loyalty to the wrong side and kind of saying, "Hey, we're supporting you guys," type of a thing, which they've been doing.
So do you think then that Putin wants to destroy NATO, right? He doesn't want there to be a strong West. Trump essentially tried to undermine NATO and break it apart.
He tried to do it for Putin.
4 years. And so what do you make of this argument that somehow we're hearing that, it's because NATO expanded. That's why Vladimir Putin invaded and all this stuff. Get in a little bit of some discussions.
No, it was a perfect storm. When Trump first came into office, Putin and Russia looked at him like a clown. They didn't take him seriously. He was very unstable. He didn't know world politics. He was naive. He was new to the game. And they were watching. And then all of a sudden, Trump started playing into Putin's hand by trying to dismantle NATO. When he started seeing that, he let it play out more and more. That's why he didn't attack or do anything earlier, because if Trump would have won, he probably would have dismantled NATO, and then Putin would have got what he wanted without even using force. So
beyond NATO, though, because I got to tell you, I'm a little fed up with the red canard of NATO, because now Ukraine, you're Ukrainian. This crisis started in 2014, not because of NATO, but because Ukraine was about to have an agreement with the European Union. Yes. All right. Yes. And frankly, this is not where he's going to stop. Ukraine was not on the verge, like some of the Western Balkan countries, of joining NATO. It was nowhere near it. It was building a deeper relationship with the EU, which is the true democratizing
100%.
Institution. And frankly, now, since you said that, the dismantling of NATO, I also remember during the Trump years, the ire and the vileness directed at the European Union.
Yes.
All right? So is NATO just it's the appetizer and is the main course, like destroying European unity?
I mean, NATO, everybody has their opinion about how NATO works or doesn't work and what it's there for. But at the end of the day, Putin used a crack in the system. There was a crack in the system. There was, the world was, because of what happened, you had coronavirus. You had Trump screaming that we had fake elections. America was in turmoil. Biden took over. He had all these problems to deal with. The NATO was this kind of in a uproar because Trump just left. Nobody knew where they were, so they had to get. So while all of this was going on, like I say, a perfect storm, what Putin was able to do was to amass the forces on the borders of Ukraine. The other thing that he did quietly, which people don't really notice, is he united with Belarus. When he took a look and seen how the West reacted to the Belarusian, when Belarus didn't elect Lukashenko, and they had the uproar, there was no really, I mean, yes, we sanctioned, but Lukashenko was so sanctioned that he had nowhere else to turn to but Putin. So now you have not only Russian forces coming in, you have Belarusian forces coming in, which are on the border of Ukraine and very close coming to that.
You know, I want to ask you one thing that's a bit of a sideways angle, but maybe illustrative of what we're looking at overall, which is that Ukraine was a democratizing country, is a democratizing country, is a country that has emerged from the Soviet Union, threw off a puppet of the Kremlin, has had elections, has leaned into the EU, has a Jewish president. Tell me a little bit about the hopes and dreams of the Ukrainian people, where they're trying to take their country, where the heart and soul is of the Ukrainian people, and give us a little bit of flavor about them as human beings as well, and why does that provoke Vladimir Putin so much?
Ukrainian people are, you know, it's hard to say, they're like every other people. They love life. They enjoy going out, having good times, and being free. And one of the things that they've seen over the past 20, 30 years since they've been, I mean, even though they're still relatively young as a democracy, they went through a lot of things. Like you said, they have a Jewish, but not only a Jewish president, they were the first country to have a Jewish president and a Jewish prime minister at the same time. So, yes, with all of that going on, they still had a lot of problems. The problem was that from day one, Putin always had, there was a pro-Russian group in Ukraine that would constantly, through them, he would constantly, there was corruption, there was constantly turmoil, and he was able to. And 2014 is a very, very interesting part that we talk about, because that was a long-term plan that Putin had. That because of the people stood up on Maidan, they overthrew his plan, because he didn't want to come in with guns blasting. He wanted to take over, and he was able to, with Yanukovych, take over the become united. And when Maidan happened and they threw him out and all of that transpired, he tried to use another way, which a lot, you know, I don't know if you know, name Viktor Medvedchuk. Viktor Medvedchuk is a pro-Russian politician that Putin is very close to. Putin is actually a godfather to his daughter. He was a mediator, you would say, and the voice. What if you take a look back what happened in the summertime, all of a sudden Zelensky and with the permission of the U.S. embassy went after Medvedchuk, shut down his television, arrested him, put him under home confinement. Well, right after they arrested him, if you look at history, probably about within the next 72 hours, that's when Putin put the first 3,000 troops onto the borders. So there's a lot behind the scenes that goes on, that why this is transpiring right now. But the Ukrainian people, they want freedom. They're intertwined with America so much. There's so many, they have relatives, family living here. They've been able in the past 20 some odd years travel back and forth freely to Europe, to all over the world. So they've seen how the world is, and that's what they want. They don't want to be locked under some terrorist monster that's going to tell them how they live, how they walk, how they live. They want their freedom.
So Lev, let's talk about the American people, right? Because at the top of this show, I said this might be the end of the Pax Americana, and the Pax Americana started because Americans, in establishing the post-World War II order, were willing to sacrifice. We were rationing our food to make sure Europe could be fed. We were doing the Marshall Plan. We were establishing the Peace Corps. how, I mean, and now we have, and we talked about this in a previous episode, if somebody had told any of us 20 years ago that there was going to be pro-Russian sentiment in the party of Ronald Reagan.
I mean, it's beyond, it's not only sad, it's disgusting. And the most disgusting part about this, guys, is I know these people. I've been around them, and they don't even know what they're talking about. Mm. 90% of them don't even, if you show them where Ukraine is on the map, they wouldn't be able to find it. They don't care about the people in Ukraine. They don't care about what's going on. They're using it for their political agendas. And this is wrong.
So do they love the strong man, or do they just love the idea of defeating Joe Biden, or what's the motivation?
It's a combination. No, they love the strong man. If you take a look, that's why they admire Putin so much. That's why Trump tries to be like Putin so much. You know, I mean, if you recall, Trump wanted to have, you know, his military parade on Washington, D.C. to show his military power. Why don't we do that? I mean, they've taken over that, you know, authoritarian strongman approach, and that's where they're heading. That's why they don't want democracy. They don't want the little guy to have a voice. It's like the strong will survive type of a situation, and who cares about the little guy? Let him fend for himself.
So, Lev, thanks for coming on. We know this is a difficult day for you, for your family. This looks like it's going to be a long slog. We look forward to having you back on. Joel, I'm going to let you go with Lev, but give your final thoughts.
Yeah, no, Andy, you've done a real public service here with the kinds of discussion that we've had with you, Lev. And you, Lev, are giving voice and humanity to what's happening on the ground right now, and for that we and our listeners are grateful, because it's that human dimension that we have to always remember at the front of mind about this. War is awful, war is bloody, war is harmful, war is destructive. There is nothing good that comes out of war, and people will suffer. And so I will say a prayer for the Ukrainian people and pray that this comes to a close very soon, that cooler heads somehow prevail. And want to share that the American people, I know that the American people stand on the side of peace, and we need our politicians to join the people. Yes. But we, people to people, support peace right now for you and your family and your countrymen.
I want to thank you both of you for having me on, letting me be able to talk, and always we'll come back if you ever have me on, and I'll tell you what's going on. And let's everybody pray for Ukraine, and also very important, when you go vote this midterms, remember who was saying what at the polls. Get out and vote.
Well done.
Thanks, Lev. Joel, this is going to go on. We're going to be talking about Ukraine for a long time, and let me give you a little bit of personal perspective. I was a child in 1974 when Turkey invaded Cyprus. Right? It was the first major shakeup of the concept of sovereignty in the post-world order, the post-NATO order. And I recognize a lot of the canards throwing out, you know, we're supporting our own people. We're going to prevent a genocide. There is some legal justification. It's not really a war. And I hope some people can go back and watch the coverage of the United Nations Security Council last night. There was a debate at the United Nations Security Council. Putin cuts in the middle of a debate on how to avoid war and declares war. Then the Ukrainian ambassador, and I give him all kinds of credit and the courage, he confronted the Russian ambassador. And the Russian ambassador, who happens to be the president of the Security Council, if people are not going crazy right now that Russia is the president of the Security Council right now, yeah, there's something wrong with us. He denies that it's a war. He goes, it's not a war. It's a special military operation. And, you know, to have any American, and this goes for people who are purportedly Democrats on Twitter, too, saying that there is some legitimate concern that Putin's dealing with. Yeah. Putin's sitting there. There's Americans saying Putin just does not want to be encircled by NATO. Russia has borders with 14 countries. Only five of them are in NATO.
They're barely touched. This was a premeditated, predetermined, unilateral, aggressive invasion against a peaceful, democratic country in the heart of Europe. This is all on Putin. All of those hard security questions, which are legitimately debatable, require a diplomatic forum to address. He is not addressing them by invading and bombing the city of Kyiv. That does not address them. And for anyone to confuse the two, of course, it's 2022 and everything is confusing. Let us disabuse you of that. There is no connection between the two. Invading Ukraine has nothing to do with discussions about NATO's expansion. It is not connected, period.
Well, he's denying that Ukraine is a country anyway. He went on, but this is on us too. This is why we have the show. This is why we're going to come and talk to you. If we're going to have peace in this world, our populace has to be engaged. And we also have to acknowledge when we got it wrong. Yes. I'm going to bring this up. Some people might not like this. Mitt Romney was right in 2012. Mitt Romney, we all made fun of him. We all derided him. Sure, Russia is the biggest. We're used to living in the Cold War. Russia is, maybe China is a bigger threat, but Russia and China are at the point of that spear of destroying a Western democratic order.
Right? Well, I'll tell you one thing. I wonder if he's regretting having tried to be Donald Trump's Secretary of State, nonetheless. But look, Romney, John McCain, let's just say it, you know, when I looked, so George W. Bush, when I looked into his eyes, I saw his soul. John McCain, when I looked into his eyes, I saw KGB. This is not
the reset button, Joel. How about the reset? We were resetting with Russia. The Obama administration was resetting with Russia from 2009 up until the invasion of Crimea.
Because this country has nuclear weapons, and this guy's not going anywhere. And that is, to me, the most chilling aspect of this dynamic right now. He is in firm control of Russia, and he threatened the world with nuclear retaliation if they get involved on Russian territory. So all of this together means, America, we have a problem.
But isn't that a red canard too? Because nobody's talking about getting involved in Russian territory. There are no invasion forces.
But I'll tell you, for Americans, this doesn't happen over there. We can't just ignore it and like the blinders go up. I've heard people say, oh, let's just accept their invasion of Ukraine and, you know, let them have it and it's over. That is not how it works in history nor in reality. So pay attention, people. This affects us in our pocketbook and it affects us in our security. It affects us.
Our pocketbook. So we're talking about it. We know energy prices are going to go up, but you've been on the inside.
Yeah.
What other sanctions are being looked at today?
Right now, the sanctions are certainly going to focus on the question of financial sector, meaning the banking sector, and cutting off Russia's banks from the world, which is a big blow. The export controls, which are export controls, but they're not sanctions technically, but basically preventing American technical semiconductors, as an example, to be exported to Russia to undermine their economy. Europe, on top of that, a real body blow. The Russian people are going to feel this. And the Russian people have to understand that this didn't have to happen. This was Vladimir Putin doing it. That doesn't mean they'll rise up. That's not the point. The point is that they have to know who to blame. Because Vladimir Putin, I'll just say this, has spent a ton of time the last few months trying to avoid blame, telling his people it's not his fault. It's Ukraine that's making him invade. Trying to find false flag rationales to justify create a pretext to justify an invasion. He doesn't want to be blamed for this, even though he's doing it. He's been trying to find ways to say it's justifiable because he knows that it's not. And he knows that people will not be happy with this when they start getting hurt
So going to the question of him getting blamed, and he still got to cater a little bit to oligarchs. Eli Lake has been arguing that we should kick oligarchs out of universities, their kids out of universities, cancel their visas, cancel their passports, make it harder for them to do business. I mean, Lev is calling us from Miami. I mean, I don't think you can throw a rock in Miami without hitting an investment property by a Russian oligarch. Is that something that you think might be on the table?
I think that the Treasury Department has a very long list of persons that they view in that under that description, then whose bank accounts they can freeze. And they are also going after the children of these oligarchs because they know that the oligarchs, like all good con men and cheats, hide behind their children and put their money in their kids' names. So they're going after the kids as well. But this is not going to be easy. And that's the one thing I want to point out. There's no magic button. In international affairs, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way in life, but certainly not in international affairs. We are probably looking now at a really long slog, both for the Ukrainian people who have to suffer at the tip of a spear, and for the overall international community to keep the pressure on and keep the pain on to try to reverse this horrible, horrible moment.
So one of your main responsibilities when you were a state was to handle relations with Congress and to shepherd nominees through. And we know that, you know, going back to my premise of we've been fighting shorthanded, because not all of President Biden's nominees have gone through. Related to the Ukraine issue, because Senator Cruz has held up a lot of ambassadorial nominees and other national security nominees over Nord Stream 2. Now Nord Stream 2 is suspended because of Germany. Does that mean we're going to get a flurry of nominees and maybe we start this next phase of this competition fully staffed?
I sure hope so. And I think that Ted Cruz said he was going to lift his hold now. And that would be good because the worst thing that this administration had to deal with in terms of national security is not having the top people in the jobs. I worked in bureaucracy at the innards, and I worked in a more senior role. And when you're in the innards and you don't have a senior official who's appointed, confirmed in that job, you just don't have the direction you need. So hopefully those names, those people will go through. Congress will recognize that we are in a national security crisis moment. And we will really work on Team America. That would be the ultimate goal. And I have to say, I'll say again, for us in this role, talking about this stuff matters. And it also matters because it helps Americans. It helps us to be able to talk to our elected representatives as well. I'd like to believe that at some level, we're able to help Congress know that Americans care about foreign policy and national security as well. So I'll let you do our wrap. But man, this is intense.
This is intense, and we'll know more about policy options. We're going to keep talking about this, but President Biden said it last week. This is about more than just Russia and Ukraine, and it really is about what you want your place and the place of your country to be in the world. Our next show is on Monday. You can also get this now, starting this week, on any podcast app that you use to listen to podcasts. Help us spread the word. American citizens, as much as American leaders, as much as any Secretary of State or President, are going to determine America's place in the world going forward. Be part of that discussion. Thanks for joining Warning Channel.